We will call the meeting to order. For those of you that have been kind of on hold because of technical problems, we still don't have those worked out, but we've kind of cowboy rigged this thing. So we think we're going to be able to hear everybody. Just a couple of items before we get started. So far as our order of business, we've got a couple of addendum items that have been added. The first, EL 12-045, we will take as the second electric docket. We will have it follow 12-044. The second addendum item, TC 09-098, we will take at the very end of the agenda. Those are the only two agenda changes. The other thing that I would mention for the folks that are trying to dial in, we've got 18 dial-in lines and 25 people trying to get in. So if you are further down the agenda, you may just have to wait until some folks drop off the line, and then you'll be able to call in. So simply listen on the internet and then call in as it gets closer to your moment. The other thing I'd like to do is make an introduction. Sherry Dickerson, if you would wave as a brand new support staff person, and is going to be responsible for the phone lines, but she's not doing that today. No responsibility today, so not a problem. With that, we need to approve some minutes, and I forgot to do that last time, and if I forget to do that this time, there's a certain support staff person that's really going to be on my case. So, is there a motion to approve the minutes from the meetings held on June 19th, July 3rd, and June 26th?
So moved.
Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Hansen?
Aye.
Fegan?
Fegan votes aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. That brings us to consumer reports. Deb Gregg.
Hi. Thank you, Chairman Nelson. The Commission received a total of 70 contacts since the last report was prepared for the July 17th, 2012 Commission meeting. 13 of the contacts involved telecommunication service, 20 of the contacts involved electric service, 9 contacts involved natural gas service, 7 contacts involved cell phone service, 10 contacts related to the Do Not Call Registry, and 11 contacts related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 1,100 of the 1,142 complaints received in 2012 have been resolved.
Thank you. Questions? Seeing none. Thank you, Deb. We will move to EL 12-044, and I'm going to check just to make sure. Tammy Aberle, are you on the line?
Chairman, I am.
And LaDonna Emneth, are you on the line?
Chairman, I believe LaDonna Emneth would be probably calling in a bit later for the pipeline docket.
Okay, very good. With that, Tammy, go ahead.
Chairman, just to start out the day here, I'm going to ask that remove EL 1244 from this commission agenda. We just lately found an error in a tariff sheet and need to resubmit. I did advise staff of this, and so I would ask that we defer this item until a later agenda, and I apologize for that.
Understand. Any input from staff or questions from the commission? Okay, with that, Tammy, we appreciate that. We will defer that to a later time. That will bring us to EL 12-045, the addendum item in the matter of the request by Otter Tail Power Company for approval of transfer of construction permit. And let me check. Dean Pulowski, are you on the line? Jennifer Mested, are you on the line?
Yes, sir. Jennifer Mested from Otter Tail Power Company is on the line.
Okay, and we have Mr. Kaneki has approached the dais. Mr. Kaneki.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, and staff. Brett Kaneki appearing this morning for Otter Tail. We're seeking the commission to grant our motion to transfer the permit ownership of the permits obtained in a previous docket, EL 06-002. It's been redocketed, or our motion has been, to 2012 docket. In any event, Otter Tail has reached agreement with the other Otter Tail, or the other Big Stone 2 partners, to have the permits transferred to Otter Tail. And as I outlined in the motion, this is the first step in the permitting process for the multi-value project line to be routed from Big Stone to Brookings. And so if there are questions, I'll be glad to try and answer them. Jennifer's on the line, and we look forward to your favorable consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Staff. Brian.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Brian Rounds for staff. Staff does not object to the motion as long as it's understood that eventually the permit will have to be recertified prior to construction.
And Mr. Kennecke, that's your understanding?
It certainly is, Mr. Chairman. We're working on recertification documents now. The transfer is a condition precedent to that happening, of course, and we would expect to file sometime before the end of the third quarter, dependent on, you know, a few things coming in from here and there, outside agencies, but we're looking at a September filing at this point.
Very good. Questions from the commission? Seeing none, is there a motion? Commissioner Hansen.
Glad to see that they're pursuing that. In docket EL12-0445, I move that the commission approve Otter Tail's request for the transfer to Otter Tail of the construction permit issued to the Big Stone 2 co-owners in docket EL06-002.
Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries.
Thank you.
That will bring us to docket GE12-004 in the matter of the filing of Montana Dakota Utilities Company for approval of tariff revisions. LaDonna, are you on the line?
Chairman, this is Tammy Eberly. I'll cover this docket.
Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you. Chairman Nelson, Commissioners Hagan and Fegan, the filing before you today is a tariff filing reflecting a new bill format the company plans to employ upon implementation of a new billing and customer service system and a minor change to an optional rate. The proposed change to the optional seasonal gas rate 72 is to provide for the implementation of the seasonal change in June and October on a service rendered basis versus a bills rendered basis as noted on the current tariff. This change means that the summer and winter cost of gas will be prorated between the seasons at the time of the season change. This is an optional rate, and currently no customers are taking service under this rate. With regard to the new consumer bill form, Montana Dakota is looking forward to providing customers better information on this new form. An explanation of each section of the new bill form was provided in Exhibit A of the initial filing made on June 29. We subsequently revised the form to move the commission contact information to the back side of the bill pursuant to discussions with staff. This new bill form will be on an 8.5 by 11 form and will provide customers with the following information. Starting out at the top, a bill overview, which really provides the account information, the service address location, and the due date of the bill. Moving down on the left side, the account summary will provide meter read information, the rate schedule that the customer is being billed under. A 13-month usage history graph will also be provided in that area. Underneath this account summary will be the bill segment details. And those details will provide the usage as applied to the rate schedule for each service that we are billing. So if it's for a combination service customer, the gas bill segment detail will all be shown, and then the electric segment detail shown. Moving over to the top right-hand side, the contact information will also include a quick reference to the due date in calendar form. And toward the bottom part of the bill, there will be an area where we may provide messages to customers if there's something particular to a certain town or community, we could provide a bill message right on the bill. And then finally, the payment stub. Moving to the back side of the bill, we'll be able to provide information related to the ways to pay the bill. All the billing terms and definitions will be provided there. So if there is an acronym used in that bill detail on the front, it will be described and explained on the back of the bill. Also included there is company and commission contact information. And finally, on the back of that bill stub, customers will be able to provide us with a change in contact information. We'll begin communicating the change to customers through bill inserts and web materials upon approval of the form. So that concludes my summary. I'm available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Matthew Tisdale with staff. We have no objection to the change in rate 72, and then the contents of the bill format are in compliance with ARSD 2010-1703. I think staff would just add that we appreciate MDU's flexibility in altering their bill based on our suggestions, and we would enthusiastically recommend approval.
Thank you. Questions from the commission? Seeing none, is there a motion? Commissioner Feagin.
Mr. Chairman, first of all, thank you to MDU for making the bill more readable and understandable by the customers. So with that, GE 12-004, move that the commission approve the proposed tariff revisions.
Discussion on the motion. I would simply say two things. I think you've done a good job of laying out the bill. I especially appreciate the 13-month usage history graph. Being a graph kind of guy, I like that. And also appreciate your working with staff to make a few adjustments at the end. With that, any other comments? Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Commissioner Feagin?
Feagin votes aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you. Brings us to natural gas, NG 12-004, in the matter of the filing by Northwestern Corp for approval of amendment to a contract with Deviations with Associated Milk Producers, Inc. And Jeff Decker, do we have you on the line?
Yes, I am here, Mr. Chairman. I have just a few comments on this filing.
Very good. Go ahead, Jeff.
Okay, since 2007, the customer has been served on an interruptible rate, that being rate 85 FAM. The customer has chosen to become a transport customer, purchasing their gas from a third party. With this change in gas supplier, rate 85 is no longer appropriate. With commission approval of the contract with Deviation, the customer can be appropriately served under rate 87. I'm available for questions.
Thank you. Staff.
Thank you, Chairman. This move to accommodate the customer to receive transport service is really rate neutral. The distribution delivery charge portion of the rate remains the same, as well as the 9.9-cent recovery of the pipeline costs. We would recommend approval.
Thank you. Questions from the commission? Seeing none, is there a motion? I will move an NG 12-004 that the commission approve the proposed contract with Deviation Amendment and associated tariff revisions. Discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Commissioner Feagin?
Feagin votes aye.
Nelson votes aye. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. Brings us to PS 12-003 in the matter of pipeline penalty worksheet approval. Nathan or Kara?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Kara Semler for staff. We appreciate the discussion the commission had earlier this summer regarding this topic, and we worked with industry to incorporate your comments and their concerns and have reworked the penalty worksheet and respectfully ask for your approval today.
Thank you. Comments from anyone in industry that might be on the line? LaDonna Emineth from MDU, are you on the line? If you are, we're not hearing you. Anyone else on the line that would care to comment on this docket? Questions from the commission?
Mr. Chairman?
Commissioner Hansen.
I don't have any questions. I have some comments since there aren't questions. I was in Narok, the National Association of Regulatory Utility Commissioners meeting just a week ago, and there was a special meeting for commissioners only, and there was a panel of, if I recall correctly, five or six people. And there was some frustration in listening to what some of them had to say. Some of them were, I would call, bureaucrats, and they insisted that we as commissioners should levy fines. They just almost arbitrarily said that we should go back home and levy fines because we will be judged if there is some type of an accident or something like that. We will be judged on how many fines we have levied and whether or not we have been really harsh. You know, it was phenomenal. But that was just one of the panel speakers. The others did not intimate that to any extent. I thought it was an extremely valuable panel, and I felt that it gave a great perspective on the challenges of pipeline safety. And I chatted with several of the members afterwards. I had an opportunity to meet with them, and three of them, and we sat down, and every one of them knew Nathan Solem. Every one of them spoke very, very highly of Nathan, and I shouldn't pump him up too much because we don't want to see him leave, but on a national level, Nathan is very well known. These are three individuals from three different parts of the country who are looked at. These are panelists. These are people who are looked upon as being the top-notch people in pipeline safety, and I just wanted to mention that people across the nation know of our pipeline safety and the good things that we're doing here. So, Nathan, that's a great job.
Thank you for sharing that.
Additional comments? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move in PS 12-003 that the Commission approve the pipeline penalty worksheet.
Discussion on the motion. I would simply say I think you've done a great job of balancing what the feds are requiring versus the common sense that we demand in South Dakota. And with your new worksheet and the formula, we have the option of dealing severely if there would ever be an egregious need to do so, and I hope we never go there. But for all those other incidents that we might have to deal with, I think we can do it in a very common sense manner. And so well done from my perspective as you put this together. Other comments? Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan?
Fegan votes aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. That brings us to our telecommunications dockets, request for certification regarding the use of federal universal service support. Unless there's an objection, we will take all of these together with one motion. We will discuss each individually. The first is TC 12-044, West River Cooperative Telephone Company. Mr. Eisenhower, would you like to speak on behalf?
Are we talking 42?
42.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Jerry Eisenhower, appearing on behalf of West River Telephone. They have submitted all of the documents.
We have submitted all the documents, answered all of the staff's questions, and I would have no further comments, but would be available to answer any questions staff or commissioners may have.
Thank you. Staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Patrick Stephenson of staff. Staff has reviewed this filing, and we would recommend granting certification to the FCC and USAC. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the commission?
Keep
keeping you on mute.
I think we're going to let you off easy. Thanks for coming down today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We will move to TC 12-052 in the matter of the request of Farmers Mutual Telephone Company. Pat Knutson, are you on the line?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am on the line.
Would you like to add anything at this point?
Just to note that Farmers Mutual Telephone has completed a fiber-to-the-premise build to all of our South Dakota customers, and we're looking to recoup for many years from Universal Service Support to help defer the costs on that.
Thank you. We appreciate that very positive report. Staff.
This is Brittany Malhoff for staff, and staff recommends the commission provide certification to the FCC and USAC. Thank you.
Questions from the commission? Seeing none, we will move to TC 12-059 in the matter of the request of Mid-State Communications, Inc. Ryan Taylor, are you on the line?
Mr. Commissioner, this is Meredith Moore, appearing for Ryan Taylor this morning on behalf of Mid-State.
Thank you, Meredith. Anything you'd like to add?
We would simply rely on our pleadings, commissioners, and would indicate that Mid-State is working very hard to complete fiber to the farm projects and its exchanges and is on track to do that here. Thank you.
Very good. Staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pat Stevenson and staff. Staff has reviewed it, and we would recommend granting certification. Thank you.
Questions from the commission? Seeing none, we'll move to TC 12-060, Mid-State Telecom, Inc. Meredith.
Thank you. Commissioners, this is yet another document where Mid-State has been working very diligently to complete a fiber-to-the-farm construction project and anticipates that that will be done in the next year. They were fortunate enough to receive a stimulus grant in 2011 and is well within the construction parameters for that grant, and we'll continue to move forward in that regard. Thank you.
Staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Staff would again recommend granting certification.
Questions from the commission? Seeing none, we will move to TC 12-068, RT Communications, Inc. And Ms. Rogers, are you handling this one?
I can certainly kick it off.
And yes. Let me just check to see. Jason Hendricks, do we have you on the line?
This is Becky Dooley, Vice President, General Manager of RT. Jason's not available today, so I'm sitting in for him.
Okay, very good. Darla, would you like to present?
Yes, thank you. Darla Rogers representing RT Communications. We have requested certification. We've responded to all of staff's data requests, including a very recent one, and we would request that you would grant certification to RT Communications. And as you are aware, Becky Dooley is on the line in the event you have any questions. Thank you.
Very good. Staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Pat Stevenson and staff. Staff has reviewed the filing and would recommend granting certification.
Thank you. Questions? Seeing none, we will move to TC 12-069 in the matter of the request of Alliance Communications Cooperative. Carrie Flanagan, do we have you on the line?
Yes, I am on the line, Commissioner.
Anything you'd like to add at this point?
Just that Alliance has also been diligent in providing fiber to the home in all of our exchanges, and we are currently over 90% of all of our exchanges, and will not stop until every customer has fiber to the home. So we're pretty proud of that fact. Thank you.
We like that attitude. Thank you. Staff.
This is Brittany Malhoff for staff, and staff would recommend the commission provide certification. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Seeing none, we will move to TC 12-075 in the matter of the request of Roberts County Telephone Cooperative Association and RC Communications. Scott Bostrom, are you on the line?
No, Scott is unavailable, sir. This is Robin Thorson with RCTCA.
Okay, Robin, good to have you on the line. And Darla, would you like to present?
Roberts County and RC Communications. We have submitted the documentation, and we would request certification at this time, and I do have someone on the line to answer any questions.
Very good. Thank you. Staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Pat Stevenson and staff. We've reviewed the filing and would recommend granting certification.
Questions? Seeing no questions, that brings us to the end of these dockets for this meeting. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Feagin.
First of all, it has been exciting to see and read everything that, of course, is a lot of times confidential, and to see the build-out of broadband and fiber to the home in our rural areas. And I also know sometimes it's frustrating that it's hard to obtain the RUS loan, and I hope you can continue to fight for that so we can continue to get broadband across South Dakota. So with that, Mr. Chairman, on TC-12-042, 052, 059, 060, 068, 069, and 075. Move that the Commission provide a certification to the FCC and to the Universal Service Administration Company regarding the plan for the use of the Federal Universal Service Support as proposed in each of the stated dockets.
Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Feagin.
Feagin votes aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. That brings us to TC-12-040 in the matter of the filing by Local Exchange Carrier Association, Inc. for approval of revisions to its access services tariff number 1. If my recollection is correct, we're still dealing with a singular issue of Brookings on page 17-4.5. With that, I was going to turn to LECA first. Go ahead.
Thank you, Commissioner Nelson. Members of the Commission, I find myself in a little bit of a dilemma here. I'm certainly not trying to be hard to deal with, but I think that there's going to be a request from AT&T that this docket be deferred again, and that the parties are still negotiating for an agreement on the actual language that will be included on the tariff page. I feel compelled to point out to you, however, that from LECA's perspective, we have submitted two separate drafts of language on a tariff page. We believe this docket is ready to go. We believe we've completed the transitional rate for Brookings in the same manner as we have for all the other companies. We believe that we've addressed the issue that they've raised concerning wireless minutes. And so from LECA's perspective, we would just assume that this page or this tariff be approved. The other thing that's happening is the company is in the position of wanting to implement its transitional rates in the current billing cycle. And so the longer we delay, the more of a dilemma that places the company in, because they really can't implement the new rates, and then we're going to have to deal with true-ups. And so, as I said, it could be me here next time asking for a deferral. I'm not trying to be hard to deal with at all, but from LECA's perspective, we believe this is ready to be approved. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's hear from AT&T. I think we'll go around the circle, hear from everybody, and then go to questions. Mr. Van Camp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bill Van Camp on behalf of AT&T Communications of the Midwest. Ms. Rogers is correct. The City of Brookings and AT&T are still in discussions on this matter. I think procedurally, the way this docket is set up and this specific tariff page that hasn't been approved as a party, we have a right to request deferral or hearing on the matter. Now, certainly I would hope that the discussions and negotiations between the City of Brookings and AT&T bear fruit and that this matter is resolved. DARLA did submit two proposed revisions to the tariff. That is part of the discussion, but we would certainly hope to be able to wrap this up. I will note that the tariff itself and the rate was not suspended. We specifically, when we intervened, asked that it not be suspended. Of course, it is always subject to a true-up if the commission were to determine at a hearing that the rate was not appropriate. Hopefully, we'll be able to resolve that without this happening. But what will come out of the discussions between the companies is unknown at this point.
Thank you.
I will be available for any questions.
Thank you. Staff.
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer of staff. Staff has not seen the language yet that has been exchanged between the parties, so we would have no comment on that at all, other than deferral is probably appropriate at this point.
Questions? Rolaine.
I had a question for Ms. Rogers. You said it's ready for approval, but then that would be without the language that you were offering?
No, I'm sorry. We would offer the tariff page up for approval with the language that the latest language that we proposed to AT&T.
But we haven't seen that.
And I apologize for that. I thought I had submitted it to staff, but I think I did the first round of language, maybe not the second. It's you know, substantively it's the same. We just tweaked the language a little bit, but I apologize for not getting that to staff. And, you know, one of the things I said before this hearing is if we need to defer it to bring staff up to speed, I'm okay with that. I just I'm concerned about the delays, and I'm concerned that perhaps the negotiations and the continued discussions between AT&T and the City of Brookings are not necessarily related to this tariff and LECA's filing of the tariff and the manner in which they've done it.
But can you explain what the issue is?
I think the issue relates to wireless minutes and how they are included in the calculation of which rate elements apply to those wireless minutes.
Thank you. I would recommend deferral because we don't even have the language.
Yeah, if the staff hasn't seen it, the commission certainly hasn't seen it, so I don't know that we can move forward today. And I guess my other question is, with that particular dispute, I mean, is that something that staff can help to resolve, or is that really between the two companies?
My understanding, and again, it's just in talking to the attorneys, but it's, as Ms. Rogers indicated, it's probably bigger than just this tariff. I think it involves litigation all over, so...
Oh, you don't want to fix that?
I'm perfectly willing to step in and say no, but, you know.
Thank you. Other questions? Unless there's an objection, it appears to me that this would be ripe for deferral. Any objections? If not, we will defer. TC 12-054 in the matter of the filing of Orbitcom for approval of revisions to its access services tariffs. Let me check. Pat Mastel, are you on the line?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Sagan, Hansen. I don't know if you can hear me. I just got a zooming seat.
Pat, we can hear you, but not very well. Can you speak a little bit louder?
Yes. At the start of this process, Orbitcom's access tariff rates were identical to those of CenturyLink. Because of the CLEC access rules that were passed last year, and at the same time, Orbitcom was amending its tariff, so the two were combined. While we did this process, Orbitcom kept in mind the new CLEC access rule, keeping our rate no higher than that of, in this case, CenturyLink. We noted that CenturyLink lowered its access rate by 0.032029, and we wanted to make sure that we lowered our access rate by at least that amount so that we would stay in compliance with 2010-2702.1. We did do that. In fact, our reduction is a little more than the CenturyLink reduction. Our new rates are easily within the guidelines set forth by the FCC, and we would ask for approval, but we'd also like to thank staff for their input and, more importantly, their patience in this process.
Thank you. Staff.
Thank you, Chairman. As you're aware, this docket was before the commission earlier. It was deferred. Since that time, we have worked diligently straightening out everything.
And I believe we recommend approval with the latest tariff revisions, which were submitted this morning.
Thank you. Questions from the commission? Seeing none, is there a motion? I would move in TC-12-054 that the commission approve the proposed tariff revisions. Discussion on the motion. I would simply say I know there's been a lot of phone calls back and forth and a number of different filings to get us to this point, and I appreciate staff for and the company for getting us to this point. Other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries.
Thank you.
That brings us to TC-12-094 in the matter of the filing by Northern Valley Communications LLC for approval of revisions of its access services tariff. Wendy Harper, are you on the line?
Yes, sir. Wendy is here.
And Doug Edahl, are you on the line?
I am too.
And Mr. Groff, are you on the line?
I don't believe he'll be on this morning, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, very good. Either Mr. Harper or Ms. Harper or Mr. Edahl, go ahead.
This is Mrs. Harper. We actually filed an NVC transitional intrastate switched access tariff on June 11th for revisions for the transitional rates for the one-year time period. However, in working with the staff and responding to a data request from July 19th, we have amended our confidential attachment B, which showed the step down using the December 29th rates per the 51911B, showing that there's no longer a need for a transitional rate step down. And so we did file a letter yesterday requesting that this 12094 be withdrawn. And we're available for questions.
Very good. Thank you. Staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Chris Dugard for staff. Staff would recommend that the commission allow Northern Valley to withdraw its filing due to the revised Attachment B filing that was filed in response to a staff data request. And I can give a little more background if you wish, but it appears that with the rates that were in place on December 29th, as required by the FCC order, that there is no rate transitional filing required, as the interstate revenue determined in that calculation would be more than the intrastate revenue calculation. So I'm available for any questions if necessary, but we would recommend allowing withdrawal.
Thank you. Questions from the commission? Seeing none, is there a motion to allow withdrawal?
Mr. Chairman, I will move that in TC-12-094 that we permit the party to withdraw the docket.
Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. That brings us to TC-12-104 in the filing by WiMAX Communication Corp. for approval of revisions of its tariff number 2. And let me just check. Sharon Thomas of WiMAX, are you on the line?
I am on the line. And, Mr. Chairman, I'm getting a lot of extra voices, so it's a little bit hard for me to hear.
Let me just check. Sharon Thomas of WiMAX, are you on the line?
Yes, I am on the line. Can you hear me?
Okay. Those extra voices are coming out of I don't know where. Well, I think we're just going to have to persevere through this, and if we get to a point where it's incomprehensible to you, please speak up and let us know. Otherwise, we're going to try to move forward. Okay, if anybody else is on the line, that's not involved in this docket, if you could mute your phones, that might help us.
Okay. If anybody else is on the line,
this could be a very long conversation.
Yeah, this delayed echo, I'm not sure where that's coming from. Okay, we have a motion by AT&T to intervene in this docket. We'll take that up first, Mr. Van Camp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, Commissioners, Bill Van Camp, attorney for AT&T Communications of the Midwest. We have asked for intervention status in this docket. The merits of our claims in that in this docket, I suppose, are yet to be flushed out and will be flushed out through the process that's established once we obtain party status. But AT&T Communications is an inter-exchange carrier and required to pay switched access fees for completion of inter-exchange calls. We have an interest in this docket, separate and distinct from the general public, as is required by rule, and we request intervention status accordingly. Thank you.
Would you like to also address your motion to suspend the tariff?
Yes. We feel, and as the Commission is aware by these subsequent filings by WiMAX, that the right to charge in a VoIP scenario does not extend to functions not performed by the LEC or its retail VoIP service provider. Accordingly, we think that if this tariff were to go into effect immediately, there would be situations where WiMAX would be able to start collecting for what we ultimately believe will be shown through the process that this docket allows us to engage in is something that shouldn't be allowed. And so, accordingly, by statute, we request that the tariff is suspended for 120 days as provided for in that section. Thank you, Commissioner, or Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Ms. Thomas, could you understand all of that?
Yes, I think we got that. And we also have an attorney that's representing WiMAX on the call, Mr. Russell Blau, and Mark Pavel from WiMAX as well.
Just a moment. Ms. Thomas, can you introduce those attorneys again, and will they be speaking on your behalf, or will you be speaking?
The attorney is Russell Blau, B-L-A-U.
Can you introduce those attorneys again, and will they be speaking on your behalf, or will you be speaking?
That's still not coming through to us.
I'm sorry. Yeah, the echo is really delayed.
Okay, we're hearing you better. The louder you speak, the better we can hear you. So, again, if you could introduce those attorneys.
The attorney is Mr. Russell Blau, B-L-A-U.
The louder you speak, the better we can hear you. So, again, if you could introduce those attorneys.
The attorney is Mr. Russell Blau, B-L-A-U.
And the other attorney?
The other gentleman is not an attorney. He works for WiMAX, and his name is Mark Pavel, P-A-V-O-L.
And the other attorney.
And Mr. Blau, he's admitted to practice in South Dakota?
No, he is not. And we understand that if this goes to hearing, the company would need to obtain local counsel.
Okay, very good. Ms. Thomas, if you would go ahead and make your arguments.
Ms. Thomas, if you would go ahead and make your arguments.
Yes, WiMAX made this tariff filing in compliance with the FCC's ICC reform order, and we believe that the terms and conditions that we put in the tariff are consistent with that order. And, you know, while we certainly recognize that AT&T is a purchaser of access services, we believe the tariff is appropriate and is similar to other tariffs that have been approved, and we would we would recommend that it be approved.
Staff, would you like to weigh in on this?
This is Kara Semler for staff. Staff supports the request for intervention. We believe that AT&T has met the interest standards and should be granted intervention. We also believe AT&T has raised a significant enough issue that the tariff should be suspended for the statutory 120 days, and the commission should engage in an investigation or a hearing.
Thank you. Questions from the commission? Rolaine.
A question for AT&T. Is it your position that the entire tariff needs to be suspended, or would there just be certain language that could be suspended?
At this point, thank you, Council. At this point, we would ask that the entire tariff be suspended until we are able to engage at least in some discovery or review of the application of the tariff language as a whole. Ultimately, what that will determine, I'm not sure. But at this point, I think the tariff as a whole should be suspended, and that's our request.
And then I had a question for WiMAX, and that question is, I noticed you had attached a number of filings made in other states, and have those states approved of your tariff similar to the language that has been offered in this docket, or has it been suspended in other states? Could you give me an update on that?
It has been approved in some states, but I can't give you a list right now, and it has been suspended in some states.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions from the commission? Is there a motion? Commissioner Fegan.
Mr. Chairman, in TC 12-104, move that the commission grant intervention to AT&T. And move that the commission suspend the tariff for 120 days.
Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. At this point, we are going to take a five-minute recess to try to reset our telephone system. My understanding is those of you that are already called in on the line, you can stay on the telephone line. But we are going to try to reset our internal system here so that we get better performance. We're in recess for 5 minutes. We are back in session. We're on TC 12-105.
In session.
In the matter of the filing of Bullseye Telecom, Inc. for approval of revisions to its chair. Number two. Do we have Robin Norton on the line from Bullseye?
Yes, sir. This is Robin Norton, and I'm afraid there's still a significant delay.
Okay. Well, the upside is we're hearing you very good, so that much is improved.
Okay. If there are questions asked, I would ask just simply to allow a little bit of time for me to hear them.
Thank you. Go ahead and make your presentation on this docket.
Certainly. My name is Robin Norton. I'm with Technologies Management, appearing today on behalf of Bullseye Telecom, and it's switched access tariff revision to implement the requirements of the FCC ICC reform order.
Implement the requirements of the FCC
Thank you. Yeah, we are still getting feedback, but at least we're hearing you well on your initial comments. Mr. Stephenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Pat Stephenson of staff. Staff has reviewed the Bullseye Telecom Inc. tariff revisions for compliance with the transitional terminating switched access rate provisions of the recent FCC order. Bullseye has selected to use their intrastate rate elements for the transition period and adequately decrease their terminating rate elements to provide the required revenue reduction. On July 18th, Bullseye requested waivers from the specific provisions in Rules ARSD 20, 10, 29, 10, 12, and 16 that state the per-minute charge is equal for both originating and terminating traffic. So staff recommends approval of the waivers from those specific rule provisions and approval of the tariff revisions with a July 3rd, 2012 effective date. Thanks.
Thank you. Questions?
Approval of the waivers from those specific...
Seeing none, is there a motion?
Approval of the tariff provision, July 30, 2012.
Commissioner Hansen.
Mr. Chairman, on TC-12-105, I move that the Commission grant the waivers and approve the requested tariff changes.
Discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan?
Fegan votes aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. Brings us to TC-12-107 in the matter of the filing by 360 Networks USA Inc. for approval of revisions of its tariff number one. Mary Bewley, are you on the line?
Yes, Commissioner, I am.
Okay, we can hear you well. I'm not sure how we're coming across to you, but we can hear you well, which is a good thing. Go ahead with your presentation.
Yes, Commissioners, my name is Mary Bewley, and I am the regulatory manager for here today representing 360 Networks. 360's proposed to revisions to its switched exchange access tariff for to be in compliance with the FCC's report and order and further notice of proposed rulemaking in its ITC reform. And we ask for approval of these provisions today.
To be in compliance with the FCC's report and order and further notice.
Okay, we got that. If I could have everybody that's on the line that's not on this docket mute your phones. The feedback appears to be getting worse. We want to try to get rid of that.
Okay, we got that. If I could have everybody that's on the line that's not on this docket mute your phone. Feedback appears to be getting worse.
If there are folks on the telephone line that are also listening on the internet, if you could shut your internet audio off, that may be what's causing part of this.
Telephone line that are also listening.
Bingo. Whoever done that, thank you. That was our problem. Okay. You're not just a lawyer, you're a techie, too. This is good. Welcome back.
Commissioners, this is Mary Bewley again.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes. Your staffer, Dave Jacobson, pointed out that we would need a waiver of ARSD, three portions of the rule which require... terminating and originating intrastate access rates to be equal, because ours are not equal today.
And so I take it you are requesting that waiver?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Staff.
Thank you, Chairman. We would recommend approval of the filing, and if the Commission could see fit to approve the waivers of 2010, 29, 10, 12, and 16.
Thank you. Questions? Seeing none, is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, in TC-12-107, move that the Commission approve the proposed tariff revisions with the waivers with ARSD 20, 10, 29, 10, 12, and 16.
Thank you. Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Fegan?
Fegan votes aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. TC-12-110, in the matter of the filing by Fibercom LLC for approval of revisions to its tariff number 2. Marlene Bennett, are you on the line?
Yes, I am, Chairman.
Oh, and you're sounding good.
Good.
Go ahead.
That's Marlene Bennett with Consortium Consulting, appearing on behalf of Fibercom this morning in reference to tariff revisions prescribed by the FCC's intercarrier compensation reform. Fibercom filed not only in reference to the initial order to lower our terminating access rates, but also to adopt the interstate. I feel like I'm echoing in here, but to also adopt the interstate rate element structure, and in addition to having a transitional for the initial period and then to our interstate rate. When Fibercom hired consortia to complete this filing, we also found that the tariff had not been updated to conform to the PUC's order when they needed to move the RBOC rates, and so those tariff provisions are also included with the originating intrastate access. Fibercom is also asking for a waiver of 2010, 29, 10, 12, and 16 in order to allow for the originating and terminating rates to be at different levels. With that, we ask for your approval.
Thank you. Staff.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pat Stephenson and staff. Staff has reviewed the Fibercom tariff revisions for compliance with the transitional terminating switched access rate provisions of the recent FCC order. Fibercom has elected to use their interstate access rate elements while adding a transitional rate element to adequately provide the required revenue reduction. Fibercom has also requested waivers from the specific provisions and rules ARSD 20:10:29:10:12:16. That state the permanent charge is equal for both originating and terminating traffic. So staff recommends approval of the waivers from those specific rule provisions and approval of the tariff revisions with a July 3rd, 2012 effective date.
Thank you. Questions? Rolaine.
I just had one question. Should there be an ending date for that transitional intrastate access service? I know some companies had put in the ending date. I suppose it is possible that without the ending date, then they would just file a new tariff next year that ended that transitional rate. Or did the – I would just have the question for the company.
Yes, we did file an update next year to remove that rate from the tariff.
Okay, so you will file that to end that transitional rate?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. That's all I had.
Other questions? Seeing none, is there a motion? Commissioner Hansen.
Mr. Chairman, in TC-12-110, I move that the Commission grant the waivers and approve the requested tariff changes, waivers being ARSD 20-10-29, subsections 10, 12, and 16.
Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. TC-12-112, in the matter of the filing by McLeod USA Telecommunications Services, LLC, DBA Paytech Business Services for approval of revisions to its tariff number 3. Do we have anybody from the company on the line? I don't believe we do. Staff.
In discussions with the company, they were going to try to get on the line, but I don't know if they were ultimately able to do that. In any regard, this filing moves right to the interstate rate as opposed to having a transitional rate. There were some gyrations to the rate going from composite to non-composite, as is evidenced by the data responses from the company. We would recommend approval of the filing, and if the commissioners would see fit to allow a waiver of 2010, 29, 10, 12, and 16, although it is not specifically listed on the question today. But if you could grant that, that would be helpful.
Thank you. Questions? Seeing none, is there a motion? I will move in TC 12-112 that the Commission approve the proposed tariff revisions and grant waivers to the applicable portion of ARSD 20:10:29:10, 12, and 16. Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Feagin.
Feagin votes aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. TC 12-113 in the matter of the filing by Bullseye Telecom, Inc. for approval of revisions to its tariff number 2. Robin Norton, are you still on the line?
Yes, sir, I am.
Go ahead.
This is, again, Robin Norton with Technologies Management speaking on behalf of Bullseye Telecom. And this access filing was submitted in compliance with the FCC ICC reform order and second order on reconsideration regarding the handling of VoIP PSTN traffic. I'm available for questions.
Thank you. Staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pat Stephenson and staff. Staff has reviewed the Bullseye Telecom, Inc. tariff revisions for compliance with the VoIP PSTN provisions of the recent FCC order and subsequent second order on reconsideration. Only a couple minor cleanup issues were needed, as Bullseye filed an extremely thorough and well-organized revision. Staff recommends approval of the tariff revisions with a July 13, 2012 effective date.
Thank you. Questions? Seeing none, is there a motion? In TC 12-113, I move that the Commission approve the requested tariff changes with July 13th effective date. Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor vote aye. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Feagin.
Feagin votes aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. That brings us to the end of the regular agenda and to the last item, which is the addendum for TC 12-098. And before we start that, I need to check and make sure we have the interested parties on the line. Tal Wazorik, are you with us?
I am, Mr. Chairman.
Jim Kramer, are you with us?
I am, Mr. Chairman.
David Carter, are you with us?
I am, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Karen Kramer is with us. And Margo, are you, you're representing SDN, so everybody is present and accounted for. This is in regard to Sprint's motion to reschedule the August 28th, 2012 hearing date. With that, Mr. Wazorik.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I want to apologize that this came on to the Commission so quickly and thank the Commission for getting this on their docket. Just to give you some background, the motion, Sprint's motion was filed Friday by Mr. Schecklenburg, who is today in deposition, so I'm going to be handling the argument today. I was traveling on Friday. He was traveling yesterday, so and I was supposed to be out of the office yesterday, but came in to file that brief response that the Commission received. And again, I apologize that that came so late. The I think everybody needs to take a step back and figure out what's occurring here and what these dates are. There had been a full hearing scheduled at the end of August for several days. In late June, on June 26th, there was a call with staff's attorney to state, look, we're not going to be ready to have the full hearing at that time. During that discussion of canceling those dates and releasing those dates so the Commission could adjust their calendars accordingly, Northern Valley asked to hold one of the afternoons for potential motions. Then on July 11th, Northern Valley filed what I believe everybody would agree, it was an extensive motion for summary judgment, quite a bit of documentation, affidavits in support, 199 statements of fact, 42 pages. After that, there was an email on July 24th from Mr. Jim Kramer, suggesting that Sprint should file its reply brief by July 31st. Following on that was a call with counsel, including staff counsel, where Sprint said that that this should be moved off. Sprint was looking at filing a cross motion, and that Sprint was going to have difficulty getting any briefing done due to some issues they're having with their expert. And we would need an affidavit from our expert. That request then, Northern Valley, after that call, sent an email out saying that they wouldn't agree to that. So at that point, we looked at our options. We ended up filing on Friday then for this extension. Now, there is, as when these things are filed and under a rush, especially in the summer when people are going and coming, sometimes they're not the clearest. So let's look at what the rules are. The rules say that if somebody files a motion for summary judgment, you have to file your response 5 days before the scheduled hearing. The July 31st date, which Northern Valley claims Sprint is blowing off for no good reason, is a unilateral date Northern Valley came up with for Sprint to reply. This commission didn't set that date. We didn't agree to that date. So first thing I want the commission to understand is that July 31st date is not some date that Sprint is telling the commission we can't meet that the commission set. It's a unilateral date Northern Valley set. And now Northern Valley takes the position we have to show good cause why we can't make a unilateral date they set. Then we ask to move off this hearing because we think it's within the judicial economy and the commission to hear these motions and for us to have a full opportunity to brief these issues. Northern Valley's response, besides saying that we haven't showed good cause why we can't make their unilateral date, suggests August 10th that this commission order us to file by August 10th. Again, what they're doing is they're asking this commission to make a decision that to not file the rules, allowing us to file 5 days before a hearing, but to actually order us to file earlier. At this point, this case has been going on for quite a while. I'm sure the commission has heard from us a number of times. For it to ask for an extension to file a brief, we basically thought we'd get everything filed by the end of this month. That would give Northern Valley sufficient time, at the end of the month. I'm thinking it's August already, by the end of August. That would give Northern Valley sufficient time to take 20, 30 days to file, and then we could hear all motions in October. I think that's a fair resolution to this, and I think it's a proper resolution to this. If the commission should decide they want to hear Northern Valley's motion on the afternoon of the 28th, then I don't believe Sprint should be required to file any sooner than it was required by the state statutes, and that's 5 days before the hearing. Now, the rule that they rely on is a rule requesting additional discovery. The appropriate rule, as pointed out by the brief, is under 15.6.6. And that's D, 15.6.6D says we can file 5 days before the hearing. 15.6.6B provides that it's within this commission's discretion to extend time. So we're asking that this commission, within its discretion, extend that time by basically pushing out that hearing date. One of the things that is frustrating about having to be in front of this commission today is the fact that had Northern Valley just filed a motion for summary judgment, the usual procedure would be staff's counsel would contact opposing counsel and say, when can you get everything together to respond to it? And if we said 45 days, staff counsel would generally say, okay, we'll figure it in and schedule it out that way. But in this situation, the simple reason we said, yeah, we're okay with you holding some time on the afternoon of our regular hearing when we are set for the full hearing to hear motions. Now, all of a sudden, we're supposed to file by within 20 days of when they file a motion for summary judgment that is fairly extensive with quite a bit of supporting documentation. And with that, Commission, I'll take any questions or I'd be done with my argument.
Thank you, Mr. Ozorek. I think we're going to go to Northern Valley, and we'll kind of go around the circle and come back with questions. Mr. Kramer or Mr. Carter?
Mr. Chairman, Jim Kramer. David Carter will respond on behalf of Northern Valley.
Thank you.
Good morning, members of the Commission. David Carter here on behalf of Northern Valley. Let me begin by acknowledging that I am sure it is your preference and that of the Commission staff for parties to work together to resolve scheduling disputes without the need for the Commission's involvement. That is certainly Northern Valley's preference as well, and I want to assure you that we are not disagreeing with Sprint's requested extension for the sake of being disagreeable. Rather, Sprint's motion proposes a fundamentally, in our opinion, more costly and time-consuming path for resolution of this case than the one that Northern Valley believes is appropriate. It is because we believe that Sprint's preferred course of action would result in wasted time and money that we oppose the motion today. I have three main points that I would like to address, but let me first respond directly to Mr. Wysorek's discussion by saying that we are certainly flexible in terms of setting the specific date when Sprint responds to the motion. And if they need additional time, and that takes away from our time to reply, that we are flexible. What we are focused on, however, is keeping the August 28th hearing date rather than delaying the hearing and resolution of this motion for the 45 days or more as Sprint has proposed. First, let me address Sprint's, that we believe Sprint's motion should be judged by the standard under Rule 56F. As you heard Mr. Wysorek discuss, there is a disagreement about that. Sprint contends that it's a standard motion for additional time, relying on Rule 6B. But the fact of the matter is that Sprint wants additional time so that it can prepare and rely upon an expert report. An expert report is discovery, and case law establishes that a party that wants to submit an expert report to delay summary judgment must meet the requirements of Rule 56F. Experts' reports are created during the course of discovery, and once expert reports are provided, they are traditionally subject to expert depositions. For this reason, Sprint's motion must be understood as one seeking a continuance of Northern Valley's summary judgment motion in order to have additional time for discovery. Under Rule 56F, Sprint's motion is defective because the motion itself failed to include the required affidavit, and because the belated attempt to cure this deficiency is insufficient. The starting point for understanding why Sprint's motion is defective is recognition that under the South Dakota Rules of Civil Procedure, a summary judgment motion is proper any time after 30 days from the filing of the complaint. We know that discovery need not be completed because Sprint itself has already sought a motion for summary judgment with regard to Northern Valley's count two. Here, because summary judgment may be filed before discovery concludes, if a party wishes to delay resolution of that motion, it must state with specificity what additional discovery it believes is needed and why that discovery is likely to create a genuine issue of material fact. Only by providing these details does a party enable the tribunal to gauge whether more discovery is actually appropriate or whether discovery is sought merely for delay. Here, Sprint's motion provides no specificity, and Sprint has not identified how it believes an expert report would provide admissible evidence that would defeat Northern Valley's summary judgment motion. For this reason, Sprint's motion is defective. My second point is that Sprint's desire to file a cross motion should not warrant the delay that it seeks here. Northern Valley respectfully submits that the desire to file a cross motion does not present good cause for delay, but rather Sprint should be required to focus its energies towards responding to Northern Valley's motion so that we can keep the August 28th hearing date. The response that Sprint files will fully apprise the Commission of Sprint's position about whether there are contested issues of fact or whether there are legal issues that require the commission's consideration. Northern Valley does not agree with Sprint that addressing a cross motion at the same time as the commission takes up Northern Valley's motion is the best way to proceed. By allowing Northern Valley's motion to go forward as scheduled on August 28th, issues could be narrowed, that the deposition of Sprint's witnesses, which have yet to occur, could be narrowed, and Northern Valley could be spared some or all of the expenses associated with hiring expert witnesses, as well as preparing for and defending expert depositions. Northern Valley's motion was filed at the time that it was, specifically in order to determine whether it may be able to avoid these unnecessary expenses. Delay denies Northern Valley this opportunity. My third and final point is that further delay is unwarranted given the facts of this case. This case was filed in October 2009. It's now almost August 2012. Northern Valley's depositions, interrogatories, document productions were completed before the end of 2011, well over 8 months ago. Thus, Sprint has had all of the discovery it needed and ample opportunity to file its cross motion during that period of time. There is no reason that additional delay should be granted in order to allow Sprint to file a motion that it could have filed months ago. I also suggest that the reason for Sprint's delay can be found in Northern Valley's motion for partial summary judgment. I won't say the specific figures because they are confidential, but suffice it to say that the amount of undisputed traffic of interstate access charges that Sprint has not disputed but has nevertheless withheld from Northern Valley is 20 times more than the amount of interstate access charges associated with the conference calling traffic that is at issue in this case. Again, 20 times the amount of undisputed traffic has been withheld as compared to the conference calling traffic. Based on this fact, there is no surprise that Sprint is not anxious for the commission to address Northern Valley's motion for summary judgment. In sum, Northern Valley does not believe that Sprint should be allowed to delay resolution of the motion for summary judgment in order to prepare a cross motion. Accordingly, Northern Valley would request that the commission adopt the schedule set forth in its response or a modified schedule that nevertheless keeps the August 28th hearing date. Thank you, and I'm glad to address any questions.
Thank you. We'll now turn to SDN. Ms. Northrup.
Thank you. Good morning. Margo Northrup on behalf of SDN. And we're not here to take a specific position on the motion that's before you, but it makes it very apparent that we need a procedural schedule set in place with another hearing date. I mean, we started talking about our depositions of the Sprint witnesses early spring and have been waiting really all summer until some of these other motion to compels and some of the discovery disputes have been resolved, and I think we're getting close. And so it's SDN's position that we don't want to wait until the end of October to take those depositions. We want to get them scheduled in August or September, and I think Sprint is agreeable to that, but I just wanted to let everyone know that we're not willing to, you know, sit by and wait until all of this is sorted out. We really want to get our depositions and get our discovery moving and would hope that we could work with staff on a procedural schedule to get that going.
Thank you. Staff.
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer, staff, and staff too is not going to take a position on this procedural matter as to a hearing date, but was going to also suggest that the parties, once the commission decides what they want to do at this date, to get a new procedural schedule in place. The one we have obviously is quite outdated. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wazorek. Any rebuttal?
Not so much rebuttal, but on the procedural schedule, I would agree. I think that's a good idea. And if I could be so bold, I'd recommend that SDN maybe make an initial proposal, because as I look at the case, they are probably the ones who are going to have to file testimony first, and they could then work back from when they think they could have their testimony put together. As the rebuttal, to think that if the amount of money is why you want an additional 45 days to put this thing together and present it from both sides to the commission, I don't think it has any real basis. An additional month isn't going to make a big difference on that money amount if that's what Mr. Carter really thinks is driving this. concerning the briefing schedule that he's asking you to adopt, again, he is basically asking you then to set a briefing schedule different from what the rules allow. This commission has discretion to set an enlargement of time. And that enlargement of time, as I say, is under 1566B. And that statute specifically states that any deadlines set under Chapter 156, the court, in this case the commission, may, in its discretion, even without a motion, extend. The commission's own rules then give the commission discretion in setting times and dates. If the commission feels compelled to stay with a hearing date on this summary judgment motion, then I would ask, and I think the commission should, follow the rule rather than truncate our response time under the rule. And then we would file 5 days before the hearing.
Thank you. Questions from the commission? I guess the question that I would have for Mr. Carter would be exactly that. If we maintain an August 28th hearing date and establish Sprint's deadline for their response 5 days prior to that, that would probably preclude you from filing a reply motion. Would you be amenable to that?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, if the commission decides to keep the hearing date and allow Sprint to file 5 days before the hearing date, that we think it would be beneficial for the commission to have those papers earlier, but we would not object to you doing that. And we would put in the effort necessary to file a reply, hopefully sufficiently in advance of the hearing that you'd have an opportunity to review it, or we would address those matters at the hearing. But certainly our focus here on this motion is being able to move forward with depositions and additional discovery to the extent it's necessary without needlessly wasting the resources of the parties by delaying the resolution of the summary judgment motion.
Thank you. Other questions from the commission? Commissioner Feagin?
For Sprint, you're planning to file a cross motion for summary judgment, so when would that be filed?
Because of some of our issues with the expert, date certain gets a little tough, but Mr. Schecklenberg thought that we would have everything filed by the end of August, and that's why the discussion was hearing date in October to allow plenty of time then for any reply and responses necessary to address both pending motions.
Rolaine.
Mr. Wisesori, could you expand on the benefits of hearing your cross motion along with Northern Valley's summary judgment motion at the same time?
Well, the benefits of having cross motions is that it forces both parties to basically set up, okay, here's what we think are undisputed material facts. Now, sometimes the courts do this quite often, is where they'll set cross motions at the same time. It gets both legal theories out there and allows the court to examine exactly, okay, here's what they think are the material facts that are undisputed. Here's what they think the material facts are undisputed. Are any in dispute? Okay, these ones, this one on Sprint side, we agree are not disputed. These ones on Northern Valley side, we agree are not disputed. And then the commission, if the commission finds neither have met their burden, you've basically have narrowed the issue saying we have found these material facts. You know, these are our material facts. So if we're going to hearing, you don't need, you know, basically you don't need to put this information on. These are the issues you have to resolve. This handful of facts on this side, this handful of facts on this one, for us to come to final legal conclusion. It occurs in a number of cases where you have, especially contract type related cases, in litigation where we'll have cross motions in the court. Basically, if they feel they can't grant summary judgment, they essentially can narrow it down, and they're prepared with all the briefing as to what the issues are.
And then I think SDN raised a concern about they're being able to go ahead with depositions and discovery prior to October. Is Sprint agreeable to that?
Ms. Weiss, they've been dealing primarily with Mr. Shecklenburg on discovery issues. It's my understanding that Sprint's not raised any issues of delaying discovery while this is going on. In fact, to the extent that we'd be filing a cross motion if somebody might need some additional discovery.
Okay, thank you.
Additional questions?
Mr. Chairman, if I might have an opportunity to respond.
Certainly.
I just wanted to point out again that we believe that that Sprint will be able to put forth its position entirely in response to Northern Valley's motion. As you go through that process, you actually have to respond point for point to the statement of undisputed facts proffered by Northern Valley. And so that response would enable the commission to determine at that time whether there are, in fact, any disputed facts. And we don't need a cross motion in order to accomplish that objective. And as I stated earlier and want to reiterate, we believe that resolution of this motion as we move into the depositions for Sprint's witnesses could indeed narrow the issues up for discovery and therefore save the parties both time and expense.
Thank you. Additional questions? Just Mr. Hansen.
Comment if I could, and it probably isn't necessary, but in this process of the rescheduling, and I agree that that needs to take place, but I want to be certain that in the extension of times for parties to be able to file and such, that we don't place our staff in a position where they have a compressed time and it's more difficult for them to review the additional filings. Because that, I know we're up against deadlines, and if we have to have an extension, then that's, from my standpoint, that's what we need to do.
Is there a motion? Commissioner Hansen.
Mr. Chairman, in TC09-098, I move that the Commission grant Sprint's motion to reschedule the August 28, 2012 hearing date.
Discussion on the motion. I'm going to oppose the motion, and I understand the points on both sides of this, but I think folks understand that I like to move things along. And it doesn't bother me to take one of these motions first and hear Sprint's proposed motion at some later time. I don't see the need to have to do those together. I would like to get one of these motions out of the way. Very sympathetic to Sprint's argument about when their response motion would be due, and understand the five-day rule, and would certainly want to make that workable if this motion doesn't pass, but it's for that reason alone that I'm not going to support the motion. Other discussion? Commissioner Feagin.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question of staff.
Certainly.
Can you just bring me back to how the hearing date got moved to begin with? Because we were supposed to have 4 days in August, right?
Correct. And I'm trying to recall. I think it says they had laid out that I don't remember who contacted who. I may have contacted all of them just to make sure those dates were still needed. We usually do a few months out. And I think at that point is when it became apparent that the hearing was not going to be able to be held because discovery hadn't been completed or something to that effect. And it, again, it's, as Mr. Wazorek said, NVC asked, oh, let's just keep an afternoon in case motions come up, And so we did. And it was no more formal than that. There is no order out there reflecting that. There is, it was really an agreement of the parties, and we had Leah hold the date for one afternoon.
So it was agreed upon by all the parties involved that we would move the hearing date, and the August 29th or the 28th date was just a pending idea in case something came up.
Right. It's just best to, on dockets of this size and nature, motions come up, and it just seemed like a good a date to keep that everyone, because it was already on the commission's calendar, and we wouldn't have to check with all of you three for another date. And so it was just easier to keep that in case something came up.
Additional discussion.
How frustrating that is, Mr. Chairman, on continuing to move everything back. I personally believe that Sprint has a good case today, that it wasn't an order that we were going to have a hearing on August 28th. It was just an idea to have the availability. But I'm extremely frustrated that this has been going on since 2009. And the next time, I certainly won't give as much grace as I am today. So I will support Commissioner Hansen's motion.
Additional discussion. Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion to grant Sprint's motion to reschedule the August 28th, 2012 hearing date will vote aye. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
And Nelson votes nay. Motion carries. Anything else for the good of the order today? Announcements. Commissioners will attend the Department of Energy Western Joint Outreach Team Stakeholder Workshop and Listening Session on Thursday, August 2nd at the Holiday Inn Civic Center in Sioux Falls. Commissioners and staff will meet with consumers at the Sioux Empire State Fair, and the next regularly scheduled meeting will be Tuesday, August 14th, right here. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Mr. Chairman, I move to adjourn.
All those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries.